Oh, I should record too, right?
Oh, you should.
Yeah, okay,
Well,
doing it.
while Patrice starts recording, I'm just going to pretend like I'm editing the beginning off. So this is where it would really start. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I am Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host. I'm sitting in for Ewan Rankin, as usual. And also, as usual, I'm getting to hang out with a really cool group of people. I'm so excited because, yes, I know I say it every week, but it's
Yeah.
true. I'm so excited to get to hang out with all of you because you're awesome and you make me smile. And what more do I need? You're awesome and you make me smile. There we go.
And there's the episode. See you, people.
Yep.
Yeah, we go. We're happy to have
Yep. Thanks for joining
everything
us.
anyone ever needs to know what's been said.
That's right. And don't forget to join us tomorrow for the Max Show. Everyone have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Wow, that time really flew by so fast. Anyhow, Ben, how are you?
I am great, Jeff. After 2 weeks, I am finally not sick.
And you know what? It
Yay.
shows. It's like that happy energy that you usually radiate is back.
Yes.
So it's good to see you back among the living and fully functional again. Fully functional, just like Data. Yeah. Take that as you will. Ian, how are you?
I'm really good, thank you. Just the usual for me this week. Been teaching yesterday and then various other bits and bobs this week. I'm learning about the latest regulations for cybersecurity for the EU and Europe, NIS2. So I'm gonna have to create some content for our people on that. So that's dull, but I'm trying to find a way of making it interesting. So hopefully I'll get there.
Interpretive dance. That's
That's
an idea.
possible. That's possible. My wife did suggest to me, I say, I'm trying to find a way of making this stuff interesting. She said, well, get them to get them and stand up and clap or something, or turn around twice on the chair before they sit back down again. So it's an idea. Otherwise, I'm fine. I'm good.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your interpretive dance recording. It's going to be epic. Yeah. Yeah. But, oh my
No.
God. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bit tired today. Fortunately, today was also a public holiday here, so yeah, came back from my trip to Poland and yeah, it was really good.
Awesome.
Spent a like couple of days with some really nice people, very productive, and yeah, came back last night at like 10 p.m. ish, I want to say. So yeah, I was tired.
Well, welcome back, and I'm glad you had a good time.
Did have a lot of really good food, so.
Excellent. Then it was all worthwhile.
Yeah, I can highly recommend Lublin in Poland. It's like, I mean, really nice city, close to like the Ukrainian border, so on the what's that eastern side of the country. Yeah, there's like a teeny tiny airport, like five gates, and I think there's like two flights a day or something. So
That sounds like the airport in Lincoln, Nebraska.
yeah, it's tiny, but the city is really nice. They have a really awesome fountain in the like one of the main squares, with a like a laser projection into like water mist. So the
Oh,
fountain
fun.
throws up water mist, and then
Oh,
they have like a
yeah.
sound system, and they project stuff in there, and it's really like I saw it on Wednesday, and it was really cool.
I saw the
So
pictures that you posted of that. It was pretty cool.
And the pictures didn't even like it was really hard to capture, so they didn't even like do it any good. So yeah, highly recommend that if you ever want to go to Poland. Like, sure, Warsaw is nice, but Dublin, go there, and it's cheap. So like, I
Cool.
mean, a 15-minute cab ride for like 3 euros, which is what is that?
What?
Like
Wow.
three and
Cool.
a half bucks or something.
Wow.
Wow.
They've had a bit of inflation this year, like 10-15%, like higher than most of Europe. So some stuff like restaurants have definitely increased prices, but they're still cheaper than like here in Austria.
And that's also out of the tourist loop as well. So that's going to be a little bit, you don't have the tourist tax on top, do you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, there is tourism in the city. Like, that's quite actually one of the main income sources. It's a really, really nice city, Nick. So nice area in general. But yeah, that's it. It was like between 15 and 20 zloty, and a zloty is 25 cents. So.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's crazy cheap.
Yeah, I was like, the taxi here wouldn't even leave my house for that price. Like, that's the base price. Like,
yeah, they wouldn't even show up for that.
Exactly. No, they wouldn't. So, yeah. That's really cool. And they have actually a functioning, like, there's in Europe an app called Bolt, which is similar to Uber, basically.
Yeah.
They also serve scooters and stuff, and it works. Like, here, doesn't work at all. Like, there's nobody. Yeah, it works really well. Like, you just, I mean, even if they don't speak English, which happens a lot, you just put the address in and they take you there, and that's it.
Cool. Yeah, Bolt's in Romania as well. That works quite well there. I've used that when I've been over.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my travel report.
Awesome. All right, Tom, how are you?
I am doing fine, Jeff. Thanks. In between the last show and this show, I had my appointment with the podiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the report. After he looked at my x-ray, we had a discussion. The key word was degenerative. That's not a good word to get.
That's not a good
word. No. That's not the word you want to hear.
Mm-hmm. So it was x-ray confirmation of the fact I am getting older. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I got a cortisone shot, so my foot is still a little weird, but really cool technology. I think doctors hate nerds like us when we go in and they have equipment in the room. We ask more questions about the equipment than we do about, you know, your problem.
Wow, that's been there, cool. I've done that. Oh, how does that work then? Mr. Grant, come on. No, how does that work? That's interesting. Yeah. No.
Because they needed to figure out a point with where on the foot to put the needle, and they use this x-ray to help guide it, and it's called a micro x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this little machine, you put your foot on it, he can look at the screen almost in real time, he puts the needle, he waits for a second, and then he can see it on the screen. It's almost not quite real time, but it's taking pictures every few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I do awesome. That all the time. Nerd. I mean, since I work in medical software, nerd out on their software, and like I've had some really cool discussions with doctors about what they're using and why it sucks. So, it's Germany after all, or Austria. So, like,
Well,
you like complaining.
Tom, I'm glad we have the medical technology to help.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you're out of warranty.
Yes, I'm definitely out of warranty. I should have bought Apple Care.
Exactly. Right? You should have. Otherwise, you could go in and, like, after the fifth, try to get a replacement, right?
That's right.
Don't they have lemon laws for your body? Shouldn't they?
They should.
Oh, yeah. They should. Can I return mine?
Yep. So, Tom, would you like the extended warranty?
Yeah, I'm going to buy every extended warranty offered to me from now on.
Right? You really need the rest undercoat. Trust me.
Yeah, the undercoat. That's my favorite. That's the all-time classic upsell in the United States anyway. I'm not sure about elsewhere.
Oh, it's everywhere.
Is it? Undercoat. I live in California. Oh, no, but you need undercoat. Okay.
Yeah, they try and sell you like every kind of coating for the interior of your car as well.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of idea. Every kind of coat, imaginable. All kinds of polish. I've got some at home. No.
Undercoat in Colorado, and you say, but I don't need it. Oh, but you know, in the winter when they put out the salt, and then you stop them and say, in Colorado, the state law prohibits using chemicals on the road. You can only use sand and gravel because of the potential damage to our very fragile ecosystem.
Mm.
That's also why our cars don't rust out.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear that.
There's one place in the US where that undercoat makes sense, and that's Arizona. Mm-hmm. Because the sun just burns away like anything.
I think owning a car should be outlawed in Arizona. It's so friggin' hot. I don't know how people...
Mm-hmm. It should be.
I mean...
Yep.
Yeah. No, you see it, like, it's really funny. You see a lot of cars with, like, where the paint has, like, disappeared on the car. If they're a couple years old, it's gone.
Yeah, just burned away.
It's burned flame. Yeah, it's really funny. It's actually, like, it's gone for the clear coat and started fading the paint. Yep. I mean, you see cars here that are 20 years old that were red once and are now a shade of pink because it's been so long.
Yeah, and it's a dusty,
it's literally there, but would be 20, 25 year old cars, particularly cheap ones. They end up, those are the ones that end up, the clear coat wears away, and then, or people wash them badly and then they end up going pink. It's kind of amusing.
Actually, that's a plus. I would buy a car like that.
Sure. Get it once it's weathered, and then put several layers of clear coat on it to protect that weathered look. And
rat rods and all of that stuff. The rat look in the States. I like the way those look. Some of those.
Yeah, there you go.
You want that beautiful Pinot look, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
See what they could do is sell them to guitarists. Because we'll pay extra for something that looks like it's been beat to crap.
Yeah. my boy's got a guitar which is like half a Tele and half a Strat.
Ooh. So a Telestrat.
Tell me more.
Strat.
I will find your picture.
Telestrat. Awesome. Sounds like a Frankenstein.
It's a custom guitar.
So, Ian, I'm picking up what you're putting down. You threw a story in to the live chat. So tell us about your story.
My story is kind of where I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, really? Are you trying to do this? And it's Montana has decided they're going to ban TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Really? I mean, I'm baffled. I'm baffled, and my fellow Americans.
I'm not.
I thought, you're not, and I'm not either. No, but I've got three Americans here. Why are we banning things? I thought you're supposed to be the free country. Why are we banning things?
Oh, bless your heart.
For a beginning question, and the second question: does anyone actually know if the Chinese are mining the data from TikTok? And thirdly.
They might.
If anyone in Montana now be an issue with a tinfoil hat to go with everything else they've got?
I'll tackle this one. I mean, Montana is a place where they have been shooting up library books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
Fahrenheit 451?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There has been a unfortunate serious turn from conservatism into fascism. Where the same people that are doing this now 15 years ago would have gone for absolute free speech. It's very concerning.
It is.
As for what China is actually doing and has access to, I mean, who knows?
I mean, China's banned it, for God's sake, so it can't be that. You know, it's... But is it their, magic app to send out to the world so they can monitor us all? Who knows?
There's conflicting information, simply. It's not clear what they are. TikTok is saying, no, like, China does not have access. All the data is stored in the US and blah, blah, blah. But there have been some, let's say, leaks... of tools and data where that sounds like it might not be that. Either way, this ban has absolutely nothing to do with that. Like, it has nothing to do with facts. It has nothing to do with what's actually going on. This is just politics, honestly.
Yeah. And from what I can see from this article, it's interesting, actually. They're not targeting Joe Public either. They're targeting Apple, Google, the major places, the app stores. And apparently, if they don't restrict it in their region, they're going to try and levy fines on the hold on the company.
$10,000 a day.
Day, yes.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Apple could just
Good luck with that. Good luck with that.
10,000 a day. Apple makes 10,000 a millisecond or something.
Yeah.
Montana is not a big market for Apple, so I'm sure they it sets a bad precedent, but I don't think they really care that much. I mean, this is all about politics. These guys have no idea what they're doing. Yeah. If you want to have a robust debate about whether or not TikTok is dangerous, that's a different thing. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Chinese government policy either, but it seems to me that if people in China really wanted to get info on the US, there are many ways to get into Facebook and Instagram.
That's what they're usually doing.
I mean, the general public will give you a whole load of information about themselves without really doing anything much. Join a few Facebook groups. Don't join and just look up publicly what's there. You'll get a wealth of information.
But I think the big issue is not about the information that China might get, because as you said, that most of it is anyway public. What I think the bigger implication here is that that TikTok is influencing the algorithm.
Right.
And that is known, like that is a known thing. It is they are boosting certain videos, and the thing that people are saying is they have boosted in the past things that were trying to influence all kinds of political processes, like I don't know, votes and like all of it, like political discourse, and that is a problem. I definitely agree with that.
TikTok recently, I saw in another article that I nearly brought instead of this one, there's a lot of people in the UK that are concerned that their TikTok feed, the primary page, I talked to my daughter to find out about
the
this.
The For You page,
The For You page, they're getting lots of weight loss adverts. You know, and it's all these, join this club, do this, join this fin, do that.
Yeah.
Be your best self type of thing. And the problem with them is it's mostly about mental self-image, and people don't want that content. And no matter how many times they tell TikTok, please show me something different, they don't do it. I mean, it took me ages to teach Facebook not to show me crap and crap adverts. And it's still once in a while they come through. And so God knows what that's like. Again, I mean, I talked to my daughter a bit about things like that. She said she's given up on it because it's kind of a bit toxic and kind of a bit weird. And she wants short videos. Mm-hmm. There's Instagram, and then there's
there's so many others,
and there's YouTube shorts. Said I don't need I don't need that one because it becomes quite addictive, almost, is in her words. Yeah. I mean, this is my 17-year-old, so I kind of go with her feel on things because he's target market.
That's why I got a lot of really good content from TikTok, the little time I used it. There was really some really solid stuff, some like professional medical field and so on. It was just way too addictive for me. Like for me personally, I mean, everybody's like experience might be different, but for me, it was like you would like start and say, oh, I'm going to watch for like 5-10 minutes. And then 3 hours later, you're like, oh, I'm still watching. And and I have the same experience with Instagram Reels and so on. That's why I don't go there, because I know that I'm going to sink too much time into it.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like TikTok, it's one of the reasons why TikTok did so well. Everybody, you know, my nieces and stuff that use it, they say it always brings up the videos I want to see. Their seems to be their secret sauce. Yeah, but as you say, I totally agree. I'd be more worried about that algorithm than I would be about, you know, location data or something.
And location data is the other kind of thing that people are concerned about, that you know that this important person has TikTok on their phone and they're in this undisclosed location. Mm-hmm. Now you can find them. I mean, that goes for celebs as well as your average, a politician or someone else. You've got a, mm-hmm. I mean, your phone's already got some in it anyway, hasn't it? I mean, for God's sake, it's.
Yeah,
but the reality is.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Patrice.
Go, Jeff. No, you haven't said anything.
Ladies first.
Okay. The crazy thing is, this ban. I mean, one, I'm not sure we should be banning apps. You can ban them on government devices, or the company can ban them on work devices, which a lot of companies have done.
Companies do. It's just a case
of totally fine.
I mean, that's more about people not wasting time at work looking at crap, fair enough.
That's not gonna make a difference. But if there is a concern, companies and governments can say, okay, we don't want that on our devices because I don't know, they have sensitive data on them or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's totally fine. Banning them outright, I think
it's kind of the burning books problem, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It didn't even do it very well. I mean, that's the other thing in Montana. They didn't even do it very well. Law is written kind of weird.
It's really bad. It's really bad the way they wrote it.
Comparing it to burning books, this is burning books was political spectacle. Mm-hmm. Banning TikTok is political spectacle. Mm-hmm. And for the reasons behind banning TikTok in this very flimsy, as Ben was starting to point out, very flimsy legislation. If you're focusing on TikTok with this, based on your logic for doing this, why have you not also taken down YouTube and Facebook and Instagram and Twitter? What am I forgetting?
Absolutely. Every other media out there. Yeah. Why aren't you banning those ones too?
Yep. And the other thing about the way this is written, the first time it goes across a judge's desk, there's a 99% chance it's going to get struck down as a violation of the First Amendment.
Right.
If it even gets that far, the government
can't ban that kind of stuff. The government cannot do it. That's what the First Amendment's all about. The government banning free speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Now, and if the pieces of this that I have read, if I'm interpreting them correctly, it's not just you can't download these apps and put them on your phone in Montana. These apps are banned. TikTok is banned in Montana. So that means if I drive from Colorado up to Montana for a vacation, and I have TikTok on my phone, I'm now in violation of Montana law, even though I'm a Colorado resident.
Mm-hmm. You just drive through Montana. Driving to it.
I mean, the other part about it, what's going to happen here, Apple and Google are going to suspend service to Montana because of this, most likely. If it's upheld, there is not a big enough market for them to really care. So what you'll eventually see is exactly what happened with Pornhub in Utah, where they just said, we're just getting rid of service. And that's going to do very bad things for the Montana economy.
I mean, there are a million ways to get around that.
Right. Yeah,
Apple and Google can do it. But
the VPN business in Utah is exploding.
There's going to be the great firewall of Montana, isn't there? The great firewall of Montana where once you pass inside, you can only get certain Fox News and everything else kind of goes with it.
That is a really good point. That's kind of like China, what China is doing.
Ring.
Banning certain services and the ring, UK, ding, by ding. The way.
Ding, exactly. How close, it's fascinating, isn't it? How close that if you start restricting things, you start looking like the thing you're trying to be protecting yourself against.
In order to protect Montanans from China, Montana started to act like China.
China, yeah.
Exactly. Isn't that crazy? To bring it full circle to the way, to the comment Ben made at the beginning of this, fascism, if you look at what's happening in Montana, Florida, well, throughout the United States in general, at all levels of the government, it's looking a lot like Germany did in the early 20th century. And I'm not bagging on Germany as a country. I'm pointing out
historical parallels, just those social changes. Yeah. So you've got disenfranchised poor, charismatic leader.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Rise.
I mean, you asked that already.
I mean, exactly. I'm not going to mention the golden-haired one's name, but clearly we've got all of those things starting to appear.
Not starting to, they already have.
It's gaining. I mean, and we've even had brief attempts at overthrowing of governments.
Yes.
If we go completely sort of full circle of conversation. Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah. Like Reichstag, Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if only we had a moderator.
if only. Speaking of, who has the next story?
I think it's mine, Jeff.
Oh, it is. Yes, I'm sorry. I needed to scroll. So, Tom, save us from spiraling out of control with a political discussion.
This week in Montana politics.
Right.
So my story is about a new online, I'll call it a simulator, maybe a game called, and it's called Moderator Mayhem. And it's something that Mike Masnick from Tech Dirt and a couple of other people put together. And I heard about it on Mastodon, actually. And it's basically a game that lets you experience what it's like to be a content moderator.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's interesting.
And it's pretty, you probably won't want to play it more than once. But it gives you some good instructions, some good upfront stuff. This is what it's going to be like. This is what you're going to do, and kind of walks you through that. There's a little tutorial. And if you do it, I highly suggest you go through the whole tutorial. It's not that long, just a few window clicks. Because once you get into the game, it comes at you so fast. You need to know that stuff. And it basically, real life. And it basically presents you with, you know, like hyper cards, you know, here's the situation. This post has been flagged. Here's roughly what it said and why the person is reporting it. And you have to decide whether to take it down or leave it up. And also things will happen. Like if you say you're not going to take something down to somebody reported, that person could come back and say, no, you should have taken it down for this reason. And there's a little window that gives you some context about what's going on. So you get a situation like, you know, somebody owns a restaurant. They put a review on this site about the restaurant and use some racist language. And you might think, oh, I should take that down. And then you find out that the person who reported it to them, racist meant that the person mentioned it was an Ethiopian restaurant or something. So you have to be really careful. And the other fun thing is, as you're doing this, once in a while, it'll say, you know, the boss has decided we're going to have, you know, a team building event in the cafe. So, you know, anyway, it's kind of funny as well. But I think at the end, it's a little bit fun. It won't change your life, but it gives you some idea of how crazy it is to be a moderator and why you would never want to take that job.
Oh, I've had that job.
It's a wonder you survived. And I'm not saying that as a joke. It's a wonder you survived because having to be a moderator, I mean, that is a crappy, very destructive job.
Yeah. And let me put it this, when you're moderating something who the face of the brand is female, you will find
it must be horrible. That must be horrible.
You will find every creep imaginable.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Oh, that's hot. That sounds awful.
Yep. It's, yeah.
So we, you know, we all hear stories about the moderators at Facebook or the moderators that they got rid of at Twitter. And you think, oh, you know, it's a job. You sit in front of a screen for a couple hours. You take a break. Oh, my God. This would just, it would kill me.
Yeah. I've read articles about Facebook moderator teams where people become suicidal, where they just end up having to walk off the job because it is so stressful and so toxic. Mm-hmm. And that's not even getting into the management issues. It's just dealing with the content that they're subjected to every single day.
Yeah. The worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All the stuff that we block and ignore on social media, they have to analyze.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, this manual human moderation, you know, I don't see how you can have a well-running site without it. But on the other hand, given the volume on big sites, it doesn't seem like there's any way to be able to effectively moderate something unless you have automation. Yeah, and it's just too much stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yes, you've got the
yes and no. Yes
way.
And no. The problem with automation is it's never. I mean, humans are not perfect, but automation is usually less perfect. And I mean, there's examples of really old school moderation where like blocked words, banned words.
Right.
And yeah, people get hit. Like people get caught up in those lists because, like, I don't know, part of their name contains a bad word or whatever. And that's a very simple example, but it makes it really, really hard.
Yeah, I totally agree with you that automation doesn't work that well and it'd be really hard. What I'm saying is I don't know how it can get any better unless we can improve the automation somehow. And I'm not sure that's possible.
Or people just stop doing stupid shit like this.
Right.
I know that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen anytime soon.
I think there's a higher likelihood of improving the automation than fixing the people. And we're not going to be able to really improve the automation that much.
I mean, the DPIC detection is getting better and better.
Right.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. Like that's something AI or ML has really helped with.
Absolutely.
Perfect, yeah,
it's definitely
it's
ML. It's not. I think it's one
of the reasons I prefer Mastodon is just because the volume of the stuff I have to deal with is much less of crap. Definitely there.
Depends.
But
you're not the woman on the internet, so you don't.
I totally understand that. But go look at Twitter for 5 minutes.
I mean nowadays, I mean now you do not need moderation on Twitter. You just have to disable Twitter because there's all of it is bad now.
Mm-hmm. But it's always the same problem. Like you say, women are targets, you know, minorities.
Women, any
are
kind
targets.
Of minority.
It's so
before,
subtle, you know.
Twitter is a drunk guy stood on a corner shouting.
Yeah.
Always has been, always will be. That's pretty much a drunk guy on the corner, a white drunk guy on the corner shouting.
With underwear on his head.
Yeah, probably.
Which is very appropriate considering who bought it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And so I that's why I lost my temper with it. Was can I filter this so I can see information? But no, I can't. I'm still going to see nonsense I have no interest in. I have no. I know it's terrible. And to go back to the point about blocking words, I mean, from the old days of email filtering, as an admin who looked after some of those systems, you can't. It's practically not possible. In those days of the primitive ones, there's a location in England called Scunthorpe. I'll let you write it down and work out what part of that word was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that would trigger our detector every time we have to release it. And then we'd have, there was another one which was, and again, I'll use the full name of the thing rather than the acronym because it'll be obvious. Special person in charge. If you spell that one out, you'll see that's a racial epithet. And again, that would trigger our, because they used the abbreviation. Mm-hmm. It was the rail industry. It was it's the term they used for the guy who looked after the overall work on site. And then the term for a big pile of dirt is slag. Again, said it's stupid. That stuff is now over, and Well, I just did when you start looking back at that, but there has to be a better way of.
And well, actually,
it feels like humans need to be some way involved in this thing because you need the common sense, the critical thinking filter for some poor devil to sit there and go, no, that's not, that's okay. That's just a place name. That's not an obscenity that can go through, you know. Yeah. And
I mean, as far as I know, Facebook is doing that. They have some automation that it doesn't, like, it filters the things, that they should be looking at.
Yeah, yeah. So the obvious basically. Things where the obvious stuff where you know it should go, no, you can't say that, and that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, it looks for the things that someone should review. So, like, also the other side, like, what it lets through and where it is, maybe it's like where it thinks it might be a bad thing and someone has to look at it. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it can't make that differentiation.
Another problem I'm seeing with the whole moderation thing is a lack of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better on Mastodon today, but as Mastodon grows, I can see where at least on some instances that will be a problem.
In some instances it will be a problem because, I mean, there is no professional reviewing. That's just all volunteer work, or mostly volunteer work.
Good point.
So I think that's it might be a problem. Who knows?
If it gets more popular, it just has to get worse on Mastodon, unfortunately. I mean, because
there's already, 15 million active accounts or 11
there's
million?
There's quite a bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
there's probably quite a bit of bad things happening. I mean, there is already, I know that. There is already quite a bit of bad things happening. But that gets solved by, sometimes just blocking entire instances that were spun up for that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just defederating them. And sometimes just blocking the accounts.
So the mm-hmm. interesting thing when Ian wrote up the spam filtering, you know, certainly the initial versions of spam filtering were horrible because they were so simplistic, looking for single words and things. But, you know, spam filtering has gotten much, much better over time.
Gotten better, and it's still not like not good. It's still a lot of things get through.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, even on Google,
it seems to learn. It learns pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's SML, isn't it? It's more machine learning now that's starting to improve that tech.
Yeah,
which is a good thing, to be honest. If we can start to get that, so we can.
Yeah, and that's an area where machine. That's an area where machine learning might help us, because I think that's an area where artificial intelligence might be helpful.
Yeah.
Sure. It can pick up on trends and patterns in, say, like spam emails faster than people can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is, on the other side, there's also AI involved in writing those.
Writing them, right. So that's what's happening with spam email. Yeah.
Exactly.
Once the spammers figure out how they're getting blocked, then they use AI to generate something that won't get blocked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's an ongoing battle. And people are concerned about what AI is going to do with plagiarizing writing and images. When, sure, that's a thing, but they should have been thinking and have been concerned earlier about the whole escalation AI war behind the scenes with security and privacy, where the white hat and black hat AIs, if you will, are constantly in battle trying to one-up each other.
That's the real danger. It's not the AI replacing people and writing stuff and so on. It like articles or whatever. The real danger is the bad side.
Mm-hmm.
Like the spam, the like intrusions, like security and so on, like all of that.
Yep.
Threat actors already are using AI tools to break into systems.
Yes. Yeah. It's a big business. Yeah.
Imagine script kiddies with their hands on AI. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I don't have to imagine that.
Yeah, neither do I, sadly. All right. So speaking of technology improving things, that brings us to Ben's story.
Yeah. And guess what? There will be no politics in this one.
Hooray.
Well, lately, especially in the last Apple keynote and currently with Google, a new technology called passkeys is gaining strength. It's essentially a password replacement standard that uses biometrics opposed to a string of numbers. Well, there's been kind of...
Not technically. It's still using a string of numbers and letters. It's a key, but how you access it or how you use it is biometric.
On the end user end.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay, one of the things that I love is that we are all so nerdy about all of this that we can have this level of discussion. Anyhow, Ben, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Please continue.
Okay. 1Password, who makes one of the best password managers, has come up with a new tool set they are calling Passage. What Passage essentially is, in very, very dumbed down terms, is an SDK to get passkeys working on your website, which will hopefully drastically speed up the adoption of passkeys, given 1Password's reputation within the industry.
There's one company that immediately comes to mind that should use this, and that is PayPal, because their implementation of passkeys suck. Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Bloody awful.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, I'll leave the technical bits and pieces on this to Patrice. She knows it way better than I do. But I can't help but think Passage is going to be a very, very good thing.
Yes. I mean, 1Password is known for doing stuff like that. They've put out a lot of like really good tools on like as open source for like securing things and so on. So yeah, this is I'm no fan of 1Password for like I think obvious reasons. But I like they're doing good things. So yeah, this is a good thing. And I'm a massive fan of passkeys. I've enabled them wherever I can since the first beta of like when Apple introduced it last year.
Mm-hmm. And Patrice, you're using a YubiKey also, right?
I'm also using a YubiKey, which is not related to passkeys, really. YubiKey is just, I mean, it's a storage, kind of like a USB stick. I mean, actually technically is a USB stick, where you can store any kind of keys on it, certificates and so on. So that has nothing really to do with passkeys. Like you could have a standard password on there if you wanted.
And that's actually, I think, an important distinction, because I have been recently getting questions from people who are conflating the whole passkey and YubiKey thing and not really grasping the differences between passkey and having a token system like YubiKey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the reason for that is that a lot of companies are introducing both at the same time because they're both part of FIPS, basically. So it's quite easy to do both. Like there's libraries out there that can handle that. But as I said, like technically the passkey is not any different than your password. Mm-hmm. It's just very, very long. So harder to guess. And the OS vendors, so mostly Microsoft, Apple, and Google, have kind of built some things around that, or have integrated some things with it with biometrics so that you can only access the key when you authenticate biometrically. But technically, it's just a long password.
So yeah, behind the scenes, it's nothing more, is it?
The only threat with the passkey then would be somebody who had physical access to your device and the biometric that unlocked that device, right?
I mean, technically someone who has physical access to your device might get to it because it's stored in your keychain. If there's any kind of exploit on the keychain, then you can read it.
And
the biometrics and... is just some, I mean, technically your keychain already with or without passkeys is protected by biometrics. That's why, I mean, you've probably seen it on a Mac at least. When you like access some stuff that's stored in your keychain, it might ask you for your fingerprint or face ID. Or
so if I, for example, used a password manager and only had it loaded on my phone, no other device, I didn't add the extensions on my PCs and things. So the only way I could get access to those passwords, assuming there's no breaches at the company, is through my phone that has face ID. Is that as safe? Is that as safe as a passkey?
Still not. There is some more technical things behind the passkeys that make it a little bit more safe.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a little extra.
I've been kind of waiting on the sidelines on passkey until it generates some more momentum and, you know, all the kinks are worked out. But today I was trying to log into my bank website on my phone, which has Face ID. I sign in on my app. I sign in with Face ID. Then it wants to do two-factor by sending me a text message to the same phone.
Yeah, that is, I mean, especially text messages, that should be outlawed.
To the same phone that I just unlocked with the biometric that unlocked your app.
Yeah, and people are saying passkeys will replace that two-factor thing, but I'm not so sure about that. I think we'll have to see. I think threat actors will find a way around that. There's one particular exploit that's already known. Because it is on your phone. And because it is unlocked with your biometrics, if someone gets access to your phone while it's unlocked or knows your passcode, they can actually change the biometrics on it, or can change, can change it. So that might, and that's known issue. Like I hope Apple and Google will address. That you don't just with your passcode can't just change all of that, and then like they have access to passkeys. So now, physical access to your phone, like when it gets stolen and it's unlocked, or they know your passcode somehow, which is what has been happening, does not protect the passkey.
Well, to be fair, if that was the only way that there was a hole in the whole system, it's a lot better than where we are today.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out, if I try to represent the average user, you know, when is my wife going to be ready for passkeys? I'm thinking maybe a year from now.
Well, I mean, technically right now, because and maybe that's an important thing. Using passkeys is on, I think, both Android and on iPhone very, very easy. Because, I mean, all you do is you go in. Depending on the service, like it's different where you have to go, but somewhere in your settings, you say, okay, I'm setting up a second factor or passkey or something. And if you're on your phone, it says, hey, I want to create a passkey for this. And you have to authenticate with your biometrics once, mostly to store it on the device. And then that's it. And then the next time you want to log in, it just detects it. And it's like, oh, you have a passkey. And put in your biometrics and that's it. Like, so it's very, very easy to use. And I think that's a big advantage of passkeys.
Mm. Yep. And I can personally verify that. I signed up for a Google passkey on my iPhone using Face ID, then logged into my Google account on my Mac using Touch ID.
Yeah, because you have keychain on both.
But the device that you're trying to access the account has to have some sort of biometric on it. You know, if you have a Windows?
You have to have some. You have to have some. What if you have a camera or a fingerprint scanner?
So how would you do it on a Windows PC without a fingerprint reader, for example?
So there is a way to even do it if you're on a device that you don't own, for example, because there is a way, basically, like if I was using your Windows machine, I want to log into one of my services and I have passkey. It will say, okay, like you have a passkey set up for your account, so you like please enter that. And because it knows, okay, it's on a device that doesn't have it, it presents a dialogue with the QR code, and I can scan it. And there's like there's some operating system stuff behind it. It sets up a secure connection between my iPhone in this case and the Windows machine over, I think, Bluetooth, and exchanges some keys or something. Like it doesn't send a passkey; it just exchanges some information, and then you authorize on your phone standard passkey. And then that gets somehow, something gets transmitted. I think it's a temporary key gets transmitted to the Windows machine. They can log in. So it's quite, but none of that sounds super complicated. None of that you ever see. You get presented a code and it says, hey, you scanned it with your phone. You scan it, like you just open your, it even has instructions. You open the camera app, it scans it, says, oh, passkey, authorized, done. So it's super easy to do from
so you don't it's almost have to like fiddle with anything. It's almost like your phone is kind of acting like a YubiKey almost, right, in terms of authorization. Yeah. So is this the kind of stuff that this SDK from 1Password is providing?
It's providing the things. The interface is actually on the operating system level. So you need a somewhat up-to-date operating system. It's not going to work with Windows 95 or something old. But like something like, I think, Windows 10 or 11 or like
All the Windows Hello stuff is in there, and that's continually updated and maintained. Mm-hmm. So that should be, that should hook into that. No problem.
I forgot about Windows Hello.
So what this, the thing is, the service or the website that you log into has to support it, because it has to support that kind of key exchange and so on. And it has to know how to handle that. And that is what Passage does. The big advantage from, for us, the advantage is not as big, because we are probably using a password manager with different passwords for different websites and all of that. So for us, other than maybe being able to skip two-factor authentication, worst case, even with a text message, the big advantage for us is probably not so big. For people who, like most normal people, who have one password or two maybe.
Right.
This is a big advantage, because it's basically a password for every service.
Right, and you don't have to download a password manager and all that crazy stuff. There is a barrier to entry for password managers, for sure.
Common question about passkeys is, hey, what happens if I forget my passkey?
Right.
Or it gets, forget my passkey. It gets, I don't know, my phone gets stolen, I reset it, whatever, the passkey's lost somehow. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, you just log in with your standard username and password, and then you do two-factor authentication stuff. So the first login, like it's kind of like the first time you log into a service, you have to authenticate your device. And after that, you can basically set up a passkey, and then you can log in with a passkey. And if you have like a service, like Apple has it with keychain sharing, and I think Windows has a similar thing, then you might not have to do it on a second device. Like you have a second device, you can just log in with a passkey because it already has it. But if anything fails and like the passkey is not there, whatever, you don't have access to it because, I don't know, your phone is at home or something. You, as long as you have your username and password and the I think mostly common multi-factor, two-second factor, you can still log in. Yeah, but you don't need the password as often, which means it reduces the risk that someone gets it.
Right.
Because you don't have to enter it all the time.
I'm absolutely loving this discussion, because we are diving into so many things about passkey that I think a lot of people don't know. So this has been awesome. However, Patrice, we still need to get to your story. and we are fast approaching an hour anyhow. I'm moving us on. Tell us about your story. And I'm so glad you brought this, because it's a story that I had read and
Tom Borey has read.
Yes.
I had a couple of stories that I was thinking about. Like, we could have talked about climate change because there was like El Nino approaching. We could have talked about I fixed it self-repair program for Logitech. But I thought I would bring like a fun little tech story, more like a really hacker story, like a hacker in the original sense. There's apparently a guy in San Francisco, or in the Bay Area somewhere, I think. It might be San Francisco, right? Mooney should be San Francisco. Who hacked his Prius so that he can connect to the overhead power lines that the buses are using. And that is madness. Like, and I mean, he said like he burned out like one car before, because yeah, I mean the power lines are quite, I mean they're designed to run like big buses, so a small Prius is not usually what
I was flicking through that, because there's some serious voltage going through those.
Lines. It's like, what was it, 600 volts and 400 amps or something? So it's quite powerful. And
that's a lot.
So it took apparently a while to figure out like how to do it properly so the car doesn't burn out. He figured it out. It's apparently usually stored at an undisclosed location, because the battery life of that thing is about 2 minutes. So if he's not on the power line, like, you know, the big buses have big batteries, so if even if they're not on the line, they can like still go places and so on for like a little while at least. But this thing is so heavy, like, you know, you need these big poles and all the like equipment. This thing is so heavy that the battery doesn't last very long, and so he doesn't like drive home with it, because he would never be able to go back probably.
So he can only go up and down the Muni lines where they're electrified.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, yes. But it's a quiet. I mean, I don't think this will catch on, because if it did, think Muni would shut it down really quickly. But so far, apparently, he has some special deal, whatever. It's not illegal what he's doing.
No, they said they haven't figured out a way of banning him from doing it yet.
Yeah. But as I said, if that caught on, I'm pretty sure like that would get shut down really quickly.
Oh, yeah. And
so are two things that are two questions I have about this. This is a story that I remember seeing a few years ago. Is it actually real?
It is.
Okay, because I'm asking because the published date is April 1st, 2014.
Oh, you're right. I didn't see that. Okay, that's cool. That is a good question. I didn't even see that. So maybe it is not real.
And I've never actually done any research on this story to see if it's legit or not. So maybe I should do that right now. But I mean, regardless, the idea of essentially taking an extension cord from your Prius and hooking it to the Muni line, just sounds absolutely brilliantly awesome.
I will say this, real or not, do not try this at home. It's completely impractical. Essentially, you would only be able to go where the power lines are, which for those unfamiliar in the United States, our rapid transit system, especially those are that are overhead electrified, are considerably scaled back compared to other places in the world. You have to have the power just right. I mean, I could see this as something that eventually happens with essentially an industrial version of MagSafe running through power lines in the road. But as of right now, this might be prototype fact, but it's functional fiction.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that troubles me is taking 600 volts and stepping amps. That down to get and 400 and 400 amps and stepping that down to just 6 amps and however many hundred volts I saw it was. It's only a couple of hundred volts for the car. Without cooking the car and the electronics, that's going to take.
I think the suspicious part is he said that he burns off the excess power with resistors.
Yes.
You would need a lot of resistors to get a lot 600
of from what I remember of school, you would need a lot of stuff to stem that down.
The voltage is not a problem because I'm not sure about the Prius, which like what voltage they're using, but modern EVs actually use 400 volts usually,
yeah. or even more. Yeah, the voltage isn't cases. The problem. It's a 400 amps.
That's the problem.
And as my physics teacher used to tell me, it's not the volts that kill you, it's the amps.
It's amps, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah, that might be A plus voltage. Well, but it's a cool
it's
story.
A good fun, like, it's a good fun story.
I'm
cool.
sorry.
I fully
know
endorse
how this came up again. Someone reposted it recently. Mm-hmm. So
after all the nonsense we've talked, the kind of serious nonsense we talk about, this is a good fun story. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's why.
And spitballing whether it's actually possible is also interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
but I like the idea of do you have slot cars, Scalectrics? In mm-hmm. the States, I don't know if you have the same thing in the States. You know,
oh yeah,
toy cars you put them on. You they're magnetics. They sit in a slot on the ground and go off. And mm-hmm. kids' toys making roads like that. I always thought that was a grand idea.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean,
and as you say, one you can lift up and put down. You know, and off you go. You know, it's that makes sense. That's a way to make it fly work.
I mean, it's one of the ideas that people have thought about, like for EVs especially, like for charging, whether we should just electrify charging. The streets basically and have like induction charging on the streets or something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be very practical, but people are thinking about that.
I mean, that makes a whole, if they could find a way of just embedding it into the top layer of the tarmac when they resurface, it'd be really easy.
Yeah.
To be able to start
putting that There is already, I think there is one or two cars out there that do induction EVs out there that do induction charging.
Mm.
I think it's more like a trial thing, like a prototype. No, it's not a prototype. I think they have some cars that they even sold, but it's very, 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 very limited. I think it might have been somewhere in the Bay Area. Even I saw someone review like one of those charging stations, basically.
Mm.
There was one. So they tried it, and funny idea.
But the thing is, if you look back 20 years ago, the idea of an electric car at all would have been considered ridiculous. Well, not too long after thinking it was ridiculous, Tesla came along.
I mean, GM even before that. Like, they've been electric cars all along. I mean, the world started out with electric cars, then we moved to combustion engines, then we came back to electric cars, and then didn't do much. I mean, in the 70s, even there were some electric cars. They were not super practical, but there were some.
But I mean,
they've been here all along.
As far as a practical electric vehicle goes, one that is consumer ready.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what it's considered ridiculous right now may become science fact in the near future, depending on iteration and where technology goes.
I mean,
but for buses, for at least city buses, I should say, I can totally, I see it every day. Like those overhead line buses are like really good. And I think that's going to spread more and more. As I said, it's not in every case practical because you need to build the lines everywhere and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a maintenance nightmare though. Those lines you mean you go down all the time. They're kind of a mess. Yeah.
We don't have that problem here, so that might be
it's because you US do them
problem
better.
Again.
Yeah. I mean, it's because ours were built in 1930, Patrice.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. No, this here in Linz, they're more modern. Yeah, but so, as I said, like I mean. Batteries might be one option, but I think those lines could also be an option for that.
I mean, we're going to have a fully electric bus fleet here in York.
Mm-hmm.
In my city, the whole bus fleet will be running electric. There'll be no more diesel ones left.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing some research online to try and confirm if this story is legit. My superficial research does not confirm the story is real, nor does it confirm that it is fake.
Right. So we don't know anything.
So we don't know. But what I can confirm is that Tiosa Host is awesome.
Yes.
And definitely what makes them fake. Awesome is that they are here giving us the infrastructure we need so we can live stream shows to you every single week. And so we have a place for the website to live and for all of the show recordings to live, so you can watch or listen to your favorite episodes anytime you want. Also means that you have a way to go back and relive your favorite transitions from previous episodes. And if you have a favorite, let us know. And it'll probably be something where everyone will be like, oh, I remember that one. And I'll be thinking, I don't remember it. But that's because I don't remember what I had for lunch. But what I do remember is that TSO Host is awesome. And because they are giving us what we need, we can be here. It would just be impractical, impossible for us to come up with the resources we need to do this without their help. So we really appreciate what they're doing. So what you can do to show some appreciation is go online to your favorite social media platform and let them know that you appreciate that they are here supporting the British Tech Network. Now, if at some point you realize you have the most awesome website name, domain name, and you need to buy the domain and then set up a website to go with it, go use TSO Hosts, because they make it super easy to get your domain name and super easy to get everything you need so that you can have an account and spin up your website. Just get everything in your cart and then add the discount code BTN20, and you're going to get 20% off your order. So not only are they being incredibly generous by helping us out so we can bring shows to you every week, they're being incredibly generous by giving you a 20% discount on your order. So thank you, TSO Hosts, for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. And now, Patrice, this is a part where I need your support. Please, can you tell people where to find the live chat?
Of course I can. So if you're listening to this live, very easy, head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And you're in and you can talk to us and see the cool links that we're posting, like the news stories and also the cool things and so on. If you want to listen live, very easy, every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show. And also, by the way, Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show, if you're into the Apple side of things. And then, yeah, head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and talk to us. But let's say you are listening to this in the recorded form in your favorite podcast player of choice or on the website or any of the other places. You can't get to the live chat. Sorry, that's simply not possible, but you can still see what we've talked about in the chat. You can still see the links that we've posted and click on them and experience them and all of that. And in order to do that, you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Then there's a calendar pops up and you have to select today's date. Today, as we're recording this, by the way, not to when you're hearing this in 50 years or 50 years ago. I don't know how that would work, but who knows? And you pick today's date, which is May 18th, 2023, the 18th of May, 2023. And then you can see everything that was talked about.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice. That makes my life so much less stressful. Okay, it is now time to do some cool things. And Patrice, you beat everyone on this one. So start us off with your cool thing.
Yeah, last on the stories, first on the cool thing. It's a podcast. The podcast title is World's Greatest Con. It's a really cool podcast about all kinds of different cons. Not all of them are of the illegal kind. In fact, there's like three seasons, I think, right now. Three. The first season was, what was that operation called? Like the British tried to fool Hitler, basically.
Oh, World War II. Piecemeal. It was cool.
Yeah, could.
There's
could
a movie. Be, yeah. There's recently a movie where they, a dead body.
Yeah, exactly. That
they
one.
Used a dead body with records planted on. They, basically
Operation Mincemeat.
Mincemeat.
I just found it on the show title.
Yeah.
So that's the first season. The second season was all about like game shows and people who successfully, fully or not successfully, try to cheat on game shows. And the third season just finished. And that was about what was that called? It's the whole like operation. What was that called? It's the where like in the I want to say 70s, where like a group of magicians basically infiltrated a scientific research program trying to prove that psychic powers are real.
Oh, like Dems Randi.
Yeah, something like that. Like Uri Geller Randy. And all of that.
I mean, Randi did a load of stuff to debunk it all.
Yeah. In the 70s. I think that.
And a guy called James Randi. I mean, he's dead now. He's died now. He died a few years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I think Randy, that was exactly that was him. And the whole story around that and how they did it and how
wait,
they released
wait,
it.
Well, wait a minute. Uri Geller isn't real?
No. he's a real person, but what he's doing is not real.
Yeah, what he's
he
doing
really
moon bending is not real.
Yeah. Yeah, all of that. Like I'm just banking on the name of the operation. That one had also a cool name. But yeah, so that's kind of what this podcast is about. And it's really well produced. A lot of facts, but also good storytelling. Like, I mean, it's not just about, okay, here are the facts and here are some interviews, but it's like the guy, Brian Brushwood, really tells a really good story around it. And so, yeah, highly recommend that podcast. And it's free.
Good.
So
I just added it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Oh, that's awesome. And now on my list. Cool. Okay, so I believe, Tom, you have the next cool thing.
My cool thing is I don't think it's new. It's been around for a while, but I rediscovered it, and it's called...
It reruns every year, and it's awesome.
Probably on July 13th, or was it July 13th? It's called Apollo 11 in Real Time, and it's a website which allows you to watch... the entire Apollo 11 mission, and they have other missions as well. And it gives you a perspective with available video, animations, all the data from the screens, the audio from the communications, and it's all synced up. And of course, you can move anywhere along the timeline for the interesting bits. But the reason I watched it for a while was there was one thing I wanted to watch that you don't often see in you know, every July to commemorate the moon landing. And it's when they scrubbed the oxygen tanks in Apollo 11. Because you remember what happened in Apollo 13 when they scrubbed the tanks, kind of blew it up. So I was interested what happened. Anyway, so I wanted to get into that, and I did a search, and it's like, oh my gosh, this has the entire mission and everything. So if you have some dead time, you're super bored, you love space stuff, you can take 5-10 minutes and look at this. And it's just kind of fun to zoom around the timeline and hear what they say and look at all the data from all the sensors and things. It's really for a space geek, it's kind of fun.
It's very cool. I had forgotten about this, but a few years ago, I did just have this like playing in real time to sync up with the launch. And it's really cool.
Well, the one thing, the first time I looked at it, the one thing I watched was the landing, because I had this image in my mind. I know I watched it on TV. We're outside in the backyard, and my mom called us in and said, they're walking on the moon. They're going to walk on the moon. So we all gathered around our TV set, you know, and the video wasn't all that great, as you might remember. And, you know, the TVs weren't that great back then. And I had this image in my mind that it was a very hot day. It was sunny. And, you know, we had shorts and no shirts on. We were doing, you know, running around in the backyard. So I wanted to check the time. And of course, my memory was completely wrong about what time it was on the West Coast. It was close, but not that close. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's fun to geek out with.
It's very cool. And so you can start at any time you want. So you can just hop into wherever it is right now on the recordings, or start it as if it's a minute from launch, or when it syncs up with the actual time.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Then you can start it there too. And anyhow, it's really cool. Okay, awesome pick so far. All right, so Ben, no pressure. Keep the awesomeness going.
Well, this is a little bit of awesomeness brought by a company, by a division of a company that we usually don't talk about much on the show. But I think this one warrants it because they're not just for Apple. Apple has after months of very accurate leaks, finally released the Beats Studio Bud Plus. Yep, they do come in a very transparent, awesome finish, as well as black and I don't know, what would you call it? Vanilla off-white?
Yeah, that's a weird
one. Let's go with eggshell.
Eggshell. Yes.
Well, they call it ivory, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it does not look like the ivory of my other Beats, but they have, compared to the $149 version, these are enhanced in every way. They have another tip size for even increased comfort. The microphones are bigger and better. They say up to 3 times. Transparency and noise cancellation are better. This isn't running on an Apple H series chip, but they have a custom Beats silicon, which not only enables the same kind of iCloud device pairing and Find My on Apple devices you would see on the company's headphones, they brought those features to Android.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Yep, Apple is actually using Google's own fast pairing feature to pretty much give you everything you get through Apple on your Android phone.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And since, and these aren't exactly replacing the first Studio Buds, they're actually slotting in between the Studio Buds and the Beats Fit Pro, who, you know, if this is getting upgraded, you'll be seeing some other Beats soon. Hopefully with that same kind of running into worlds type of thing.
And because the world is fair, they're exactly the same price in pounds as they are in dollars.
Yeah.
Not always true, is it?
Yeah, that seems fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just saw somebody who was complaining about the Pixel tablet pricing, the UK pricing. It was completely out of whack.
Yeah, it usually, where some of the stuff we get properly mugged. And that sounds like that. I mean, mind you, those look really good.
But the price is the same, $169.99. I don't know what you're complaining about.
But the exchange rate for dollars means I'd pay a massive amount less if I bought them over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, come visit and pick up some Beats.
Yeah. Yes.
So Ben, these are the ones that you like to fit on the Beats better than the AirPods, right?
Oh yes. I personally use the Beat Fit Pro, which were the ones above this. They use like these, they use the standard size tips. So I can just get any pair off of Amazon. They go in perfectly and they fit perfectly.
I'm thinking of getting a decent set of in-ears that I can use during the day for work. I've got some nasty ones down there I bought for not very much from AliExpress. And those ones that you use, Patrice, I bought a set and I can't get on with them. Hmm. I bought a set of those and I don't like them.
Yep. The other things I hear of these, unlike the Beats Fit Pro, which I have, which tend to keep the Beats bass heavy moniker to them.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews on these say these are incredibly well balanced.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Which probably
the heavy bass is why I don't use Beats anything because it's just too muddy for me.
And to be honest, that's not really fair because Beats has for years had that. Like, this is not the first set of like Beats headphones that have really balanced audio.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to cater kind of to two groups of people, like the say the Beats, the original Beats people, like listeners that like the heavy bass and all of that, and the let's say more normal people.
Yeah. I mean,
and the more normal people.
You're not normal, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not abnormal or whatever. The more mainstream people,
more mass market appeal.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's got to be the question of why Beats still exists with the AirPods, but they are for two very different groups of people who are based on the same technology. Yeah, I mean, Beats is very much viewed as really the first big minority founded company. As far as audio goes.
Absolutely. And their design is, in my opinion, still way better than Apple's.
Yeah. Personal opinion. And they go very deep into music and sports culture in a way Apple just doesn't.
Right.
These look like they're designed to actually fit in your ears rather than those horrible ones that Apple sell.
These don't fall out.
Yeah.
I mean,
my AirPods Pro don't fall out either, so it really depends.
I don't have a problem with the AirPods Pro either. I like them.
Yeah, it's like underpants. Just because one pair just fits depends. Well for you doesn't mean it's going to fit well for someone else.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think I'd be happy with the Beats too, though. They look pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I've had Beats in like past years, and other than let's say the build quality, that like they fell apart quite quickly. They were good.
I mean, I can tell you this: if these were to fail, I might consider the Buds Plus from an X set,
just to get that cool transparent case. That's cool. I love that.
Yeah.
That is
like the Invisible Man. Do you remember that model?
Did they have a pink one?
You're too young for that, but the Invisible Man model of a human body.
Well, it's the Visible Man, isn't it? It's the other way, isn't it?
Or Visible Man, I'm sorry.
If you put some Krylon on him.
I want a pink case.
All right, Ben, I think you did a great job of keeping the standards high for cool things today. Nicely done. Mm-hmm. So, Ian, no pressure, but... Now you need to try and keep it classy too.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a favorite of mine that I keep coming back to after trying my usual browser jumping sort of phases that I go through. I'm back with a superb offshoot of the Opera design that uses a Chromium engine at the back end called Vivaldi. It's been around for years. It's got built-in Mastodon client. Built-in mail client. You don't have to use any of these things if you don't want to, but they're there. Uses standard Chrome extensions. New feature that I really like is it has workspaces now, so I can create a set of tabs that are my work tabs. I can flip between that and a set of tabs on my home tabs. So for stuff that I'm looking at outside of work, and I can jump between the two. It's really nice. The controls are good. It well-designed. Seems to be fairly light on resources on my machine, generally. I can't say enough good things about it. If you don't want to go near Chrome or Edge, it's a great browser. Really is a great browser.
I should check it out.
I should use my wife to stress test that. The other day I went to her iPad and she said it was kind of running slow. And I opened up Safari. Safari, and it had, guess how many open tabs?
I'm going to guess
53.
500 open tabs.
I think that's the maximum number you can have open.
That's probably why there's only 500.
There's an option you can set that will cycle out those tabs and kill them off on your phone, definitely. And the iPad, you can set it to kill off so many tabs, which I think I've started using to save it. Because you open something up to look at something and then just shove it in your pocket and forget about it and go back again and you open it up, and that's just what happens to me anyway.
I probably have 100 open on my phone.
I have no idea how many are open on my phone. It's a lot. It's not 500, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm so anal about that kind of stuff. If I really, really want it, I'll bookmark it. I have kind of a temp bookmark folder on my browser. Because I hate the chaos of having 500 tabs open.
If I count tab groups, then I'm way past 500. Because I have, I think, at least 20 tab groups. So.
Aura one.
Awesome.
So I'm with your wife, Tom. That's what I'm saying.
So, Ian, you did a great job of keeping it classy, and which brings it down to me, which increases the likelihood that I'm going to bring something incredibly lowbrow. And as it turns out, coincidentally only, I am not. I'm bringing a legit thing today. So my thing is this game controller for the Nintendo Switch.
The GameCube.
Nice.
Yeah, yes, it's a GameCube styled game controller, and each half will pop off so you can attach it to your Switch just like the Joy-Cons, and the little joysticks, they're the right kind, not the kind that's on the Joy-Con. So what's the good kind to have? Hall Effect. I had to look it up. So these are Hall Effect joysticks, and
Hall Effect.
Yes. So the sensors don't wear out because it's not a mechanical switch, and they're supposed to be more precise, and the rings around the joysticks, they come off. So you can actually replace these, the mechanism, if you need to, but they also come with a second set of rings that are just straight circles. That's funny. Just actual circles, not polygons. So if you need to have your joysticks being able to do like full regular circle around the circumference, you can do that. And it pairs with your Switch, super easy, and it will charge through your Switch or through the USB ports on the bottom, USB-C. It includes a cable, but not a charger, and it has extra buttons on the bottom, which I haven't had this long enough to figure out what to do with those, but these buttons right here at the bottom of each side, those are turbo buttons. So if you're doing something where you're shooting, hold that, and it just keeps shooting as fast as it can. Also, the AB XY buttons, they are backlit. So if that's a thing for you, well, there you go. I don't know if you can turn that off. I haven't tried yet. Anyhow, so I've had this thing for a little over a week now, and shipping, because they ship out of China, holy forking shirt balls. it took over 2 weeks for it to get here, and maybe it might have been like 3 weeks, I can't remember now, but watching the tracking, there'd be like no tracking data, and then all of a sudden you'd have like five new tracking points. And it was just like the weirdest stuff. And following this thing out of China, and then it ends up flying over me to Chicago, and then it gets transported past me again to a town in Texas before it gets shipped north back up to me here. Anyhow, this thing is very well traveled. It took a while, so you have to be patient for it to show up, but once you've got it, it's nice, and I like that it has the GameCube style handle, so it's easy to hold. And anyhow, this is a nice find. I blame Kelly Gumont for this one because she turned me onto it. So Ben, you and Kelly have to take responsibility for me buying a Switch. Patrice, you're in on that too. You don't get off that easy. But this this game controller, yeah, that one's on Kelly. Yeah, Ben, you keep showing me your magic plastic, but all you do is tease.
Such a tease.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, did I even say what company makes this? It's from Nixie and NYXI, and this costs $69 and includes free shipping. Considering how long it takes to get to you, I'm glad I didn't have to pay extra for shipping. Okay. So with that, Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Jeff, you can find me at Ben Reithig on your social media of choice, my website, Reithig.tech. And you can also find me Thursday nights with Dave Ginsburg on In Touch of iOS. Tuesday nights with Chuck Joyner on Mac Voices, and Thursday and Friday here on the British Tech Network.
Awesome. And Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me on LinkedIn here every Thursday night on The Big Show, on LinkedIn as Ian Grant. Look for me there.
Awesome.
Doing stuff with Veeam.
There you go. See, taught you what to do with your hand, and it works perfect every single time. There you go. All right, Patrice, where can people find you? See, it works. You just know. Just yes.
Yeah. By the way, I found out what the third season, what the project was called, the podcast. It's Project Alpha. So I'm putting a link in.
Oh, okay, cool.
You can find me every week here on The Big Show on Thursdays. Also, as I said, The Mac Show on Fridays, if you're into the Apple side of things, and WWDC is coming up, so it's getting really interesting. You can find out all about me, everything I'm doing, all the podcasts, the projects, the social media links, literally everything on thepatrice.com. And if you want to like join Mastodon, I have an invite link. If you know me and you reach out to me, then I will provide that to you. And that is at my instance, techhangout.social, that some like really cool people already joined, like Ben, for example. And I know In Touch with iOS is on there, and some other cool listeners already. So if you want to join Mastodon, or if you're looking for an instance, just reach out to me.
Awesome. All right. And Tom, when you're not hacking your car into the city Muni power lines, where can people find you?
You can find me, Tom Ferry, at I'm on Mastodon as Tom F at sfba.social.
Awesome. All right. And so I guess that means it's my turn. All right. Mastodon and Instagram, Jay Gamut on both. Then for shows, all right, sit back, here we go. Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, and then here on Thursdays for The Big Show, then Thursday evenings on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS, then back to the British Tech Network on Fridays for The Mac Show. And then after that, Brian Chaffin and I record The Context Machine. And then I occasionally do spots on other shows. And did I forget anything?
That's six anyway.
All right, there we go. All right.
You probably forgot a couple.
I probably forgot a couple. Yeah. I did recently didn't Brian Charlotte call Henry you, show.
Yeah. Didn't Brian call you a podcast whore?
A lot of people have called me that. But yes, Brian definitely has. Yes. I get around. And I don't think of myself as a podcast whore. I think myself as podcast Polly.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm monogamous, Jeff. I'm sorry. We have to disagree on this.
I'm with
That's
Jim.
All right. Monogamy works well for some, and poly works better for some. It's it's all about finding the right fit for you, so you can be true to yourself.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So this has been loads of fun, as always, and I'm so happy we've been able to sit here and together, and spend part of our Thursday together. So thank you to all of you for being here and putting a smile on my face. Everyone that's here watching or listening live, whether or not you're participating in the chat room, thank you for being here and being part of the show. You're all awesome. Everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. Tio Sohos, thank you for being here and supporting us. You rock. Ewan, thank you just for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And feel better soon, because if you're feeling better, it's a lot more fun when we're making fun of you. Just so you know. Anyhow, so thank you to everyone else that helps make this all of this happen. All of you are absolutely awesome. Don't forget to join us tomorrow for the Mac show. Like Patrice said, we're getting closer to Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, and there's more interesting stuff happening basically every day between now and their keynote event. So we'll definitely have some stuff to discuss. And don't forget to join us next week on Thursday again for the big show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.